This is Driven by Data, the podcast.
Welcome back to another season of Driven by Data, the podcast. Powered by Orbition Group and hosted by me, Kyle Winterbottom. We are delighted to bring you season four of Driven by Data, the podcast, and our aim remains exactly the same: to bring you some of the most respected and recognized thought leadership figures from the world of data analytics to share their knowledge, ideas, use cases, and insights across how they've tackled some of the industry's most trending topics and challenges. All that's left to say is sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode. Welcome to Driven by Data, the podcast, season four. Today, I'm delighted to be rejoined by Chris Bannox, who is the Group Chief Data Officer at QBE Insurance. So, Chris, thank you very much for rejoining us.
Thanks for having me back. Must have done something right the first time.
Yeah, and I was checking over 3 years ago, that was. Oh, how time flies, eh? Long time ago.
It does. Certainly does.
It does. So for anybody that didn't listen to the first episode, Chris, just give us, a brief introduction into your, background and, career journey up until this point in time, if you would.
Sure. So I'm going to age myself a little bit. I've been around data as a subject or a piece of content for probably the best part of 25, maybe even longer years now. Again, I'll try not to age myself too much. But, you know, that started way back at Credit Suisse, which, you know, isn't even with us anymore. And, you know, really at that point, recognized the power that data could have. And, you know, from that point on, you know, mostly back then we were focused on things like straight-through processing, how data would improve process, that kind of thing. And then it just kind of snowballed from there. And, you know, from there I went to, you know, I had a consultancy for a while. I went to Thomson Reuters, cut my teeth around commercials and growing businesses and owning a P&L, but still in the data space. So we were selling products to buy side and sell side banking clients. And then went there from there to Nomura, where we really built capability around enterprise data management, as we really used to focus on it back then. I think we still use the term now in terms of enterprise data management. I set up an enterprise data management capability. But then I first got my first kind of exposure to India and the opportunity to outsource. We focused a lot on that during my time at Nomura because Nomura bought the Asian assets of Lehman. So that was post Lehman, to give you a little bit of a milestone. So I spent a little bit of time in India through that journey and really realized the value that we could get out of scale. And then went to Barclays and actually lived in India for a couple of years. So that was a really fascinating experience. And when I came back, I went to ING, which really was my first chief data officer role. And lived in the Netherlands. So, you know, continuing to sort of grow that international experience, I think so important for everybody these days, understanding different cultures. But, you know, ING was a very innovative organization, a really innovative bank, much more of a software company than a bank, in fact. So we always used to say it was a software company with a banking license. That's really how it felt, to be honest, particularly coming out of there and going to other organizations. You really realize how true that was back then. Paris. I lived in Paris for a couple of years and unfortunately through COVID in Paris, so didn't see as much of it as I would have liked to having lived there. For Danone, which was a real kind of left turn from financial services into FMCG, but it was a really valuable experience, really shifting the focus towards much more towards analytics, much more towards marketing insights, and a completely different business to understand. Also, on a scale perspective, you know, Danone is 55 countries, 110,000 people. You know, it's big, very distributed. ING was very distributed. And now at QBE, which equally is very distributed, I think the last three or all of the organizations that I've operated in as a chief data officer or chief data analytics officer, which are often exactly the same thing, by the way, despite the difference in title, have always been really distributed organizations, which honestly, you know, makes the job a little bit different. Like there's a little bit of a different flavor to it. It's much more influenced and direct on.
Yeah.
Interesting. Fine. So obviously QBE, a big Australian outfit, but I'll let you kind of give us the detail on that. I know a multinational organization.
Yeah, very, very international. I mean, I think what makes QBE unique is its international flavor, actually. I mean, it is an Australian head office company. It's listed on the Australian Stock Exchange, but it's 13,000 people pretty much evenly distributed, and the business is pretty much evenly distributed globally. We often see where an organization's headquartered is you see the majority of its revenue in one area or in one region. And I think QBE is quite different in that respect, in that it is evenly distributed around the globe. Of course, we're headquartered in Sydney, Australia, but we're operating in 27 countries around the globe. We're organized in three divisions. So international, which is out of London, North America, which is mostly out of New York, and then Australia, New Zealand, and Pacific, which is obviously headquartered out of Sydney. And we're driven by, you know, a unified purpose in terms of enabling a more resilient future and being the most consistent and innovative risk partner. And what that really means is we are helping our customers be resilient. We're trying to make sure that we can really have insight into what's going to happen in the future. And as we ensure people to mitigate those risks, that we can also help them mitigate those risks, not just from a financial perspective, but from activities that they might do to reduce their own risk. So we really are a risk management organization.
Very interesting. And I guess, give us a bit of insight then into, I guess, your role, kind of, you know, what you're responsible for, what you've been tasked with achieving, what the catalyst was for you being there, I guess, the size and scale of your kind of data organization.
Yeah, so, you know, ultimately, I'm responsible for delivering the group vision for data analytics and AI, and the strategy and execution that comes off of that. Of course, that execution is delivered through those three divisional units. So we have CDO or CDO equivalents in those divisional units who actually execute and align that with the divisional business strategy. Because, again, we talk a lot about data strategy. I'm a little bit allergic to the term, quite honestly. Because you don't, unless you're a data organization, you probably shouldn't. Of course, we all have to create them, but you don't really have a data strategy. You have a business strategy that's supported by a set of activities and shifts in the organization that are directly related to data analytics, AI, or whatever it might be. So, you know, we've got a huge and exciting opportunity to leverage the potential of AI within the organization to accelerate the delivery of our strategic priorities. And, you know, from an AI perspective in particular, we have to prioritize around ethical considerations, the responsible use of AI, and making sure that people are included in that process. So, you know, the people are the key component of the interaction with the technology, and we will always have a human in the loop in that context. So my job really is bringing the organization together, bringing the enterprise together to be able to execute behind, you know, common view, common strategic view that connects with different business objectives in each of those three divisions. So those three divisions have different business outcomes. They have different strategies. They operate in different products. So we can't be massively black and white around the strategy, particularly when you get to the analytics edge and the AI edge, because it requires different things. In the foundational layers, and we always talk about data foundations, don't we? And most of us have spent our career trying to create those things. We should be consistent across the board. But the minute you start to get to, you know, analytics, the business edge and the value creation, then we have to be very pragmatic and bespoke to be able to serve the business needs.
Mm, yeah. I mean, I find it really interesting and fascinating, because obviously you go through cycles of, like, you know, centralized, decentralized, centralized, decentralized, right? Yes. Depends on the flavor of the month. And obviously, as you very rightly said, the context of the business, for sure, which could be a whole podcast episode in of itself. But keen to jump for the purpose of you being here today, Chris. So obviously, I know when we spoke, you know, several weeks back, you were talking about some of the stuff that you were doing around AI and, you know, what the team had managed to deliver. And I guess, you know, you can't read or listen to anything in our space today without, you know, coming across somebody that's talking about generative AI and the impact it might have and all of that type of stuff. So looking forward to kind of unpicking this. But I guess just set the scene for us, if you will. Kind of, what impact do you think that generative AI will have on business more generally? And then how does that impact data analytics organizations in terms of how they help businesses to achieve their goals through it?
Yeah, well, let's first start off with a very brief caveat, because this is another one of those buzzwords that everyone rushes towards, shiny, bright new things. Neither AI or generative AI are the answer to every business problem that we have. It's very easy to go down that route and end up in a mess. But so we have to point the right things at the technology capability that is good at solving. And in that context, we've got to be able to structure the organization in a way that it can really truly harness the value that we see within, let's just talk specifically about generative AI. Standardized or standard AI, you know, the numerical side of the house, we've been doing it for a long time in one way, shape, or form, whether it's machine learning or some other derivative of it. But when we really talk about generative AI, what the shift that took place was really the accessibility of the technology, the ability to interact with something through natural language and get those responses back in natural language that really makes sense. Now, for an organization in insurance, we actually manage and deal with a tremendous amount of unstructured data in the form of documents, policy documents, submissions from brokers. A lot of the stuff still comes in unstructured format. That represents an enormous opportunity for efficiency within the insurance industry. If you can just imagine a 200-page document coming in, but an underwriter being able to search through it and find the answers they need very quickly to be able to underwrite risk, then it provides us with a huge opportunity to be faster. The impact is broader than that, though, I'd say. There's a huge top-line and bottom-line opportunity here. The top line in terms of growth, and that's really where we choose to focus. And the bottom line in terms of, you know, efficiency within the organization and improved effectiveness. But we shouldn't forget of the impact that has potentially on data analytics teams. It simply raises the stakes further for us to get our foundations and our data organized in a way that can be consumed. And actually, from a generative AI perspective, it puts even more pressure on the semantic understanding of the data that exists within our organization. So it is a significant shift. I think there are definitely ways to avoid the difficult piece that I've just talked about around semantic understanding and still accelerate value whilst you continue to build the semantic components of your organization or of your data organization more broadly. So no question in my mind that generative AI really represents a watershed moment, not just for insurance, but across the industries, for those organizations that can set their organizations up in a way that harnesses that value and applies capital to that opportunity in the best way.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, from all of the podcasts that we record and the events and, you know, so on and so forth, I think, you know, generative AI as a topic has definitely started to maybe shine some light on the importance of, you know, the data and analytic foundations that maybe have, you know, not had the time that they might have struggled to get previously, right? Which, yeah, I think is interesting and probably an opportune moment in time to make sure that everyone takes advantage of that, right? So I guess from your perspective then, obviously you've been QBE, what, over a couple of years now? 2.5 years?
Coming up to 2 years, yeah.
Yeah, fine. And obviously when we spoke offline, you talked about, you know, the process or the kind of, you know, journey that you'd been on with generative AI and, you know, use cases and getting it into production, which, you know, I find interesting because obviously there's a lot of talk, but I think you'd struggle to find many organizations that have got anything at production level, you know, probably, you know, a few in the grand scheme of things. How did you prioritize then? You know, because I think that's the almost the starting point, but sometimes also the sticking point, right? There's so much that could be done here. It's like, how do you prioritize where's going to get value, where you're going to get the capital allocation for doing the right thing effectively?
So look, it's been a journey, right? Ultimately, you know, you need the help of the entire business. You can't do this in a vacuum. So we really pulled the divisional teams together. I mean, what we did first, I would say, is we went very fast and hard at one opportunity to prove that we could do it. That was the first thing. And then on the back of that, once we kind of, we got that kind of momentum, then we pulled all the business teams in. I mean, we worked really closely with the business team in that first instance. That was in North America. And then once we proved that we could do it, then we talked about scaling out and brought all the divisional teams together. And we worked really closely with our ventures team as well, who really have an eye on the outside world as well, really the outside looking in. They brought some partners in. And then we sat with the different divisions to really understand where they felt the value would be for their particular business scenarios. They went through different ways of gathering the information. One division used a third party to come in and have interviews across the organization and gather a set of use cases. Another, or two parts of the organization, did hackathons where they brought lots of people together and they came up with ideas and brainstormed, and then they came up with a set of ideas that were filtered from that. And another part of the organization set up a group that would shepherd the journey of use case discovery through the organization. We didn't dictate which way they did it, because those different approaches worked well for the different organizations. From that, we had a set of use cases, like a use case repository, around 300 use cases. And then we really said, well, you know, we've got to be able to build the architecture in a way that is reusable and scalable. So we wanted to make sure that we only had one prompt library, as an example. We wanted to make sure, if we were going to do doc ingest, that we did it in one way. So, you know, when we build an underwriting solution for North America, it can be very quickly ported to a different division very quickly. So we wanted to be able to scale quickly as well. And then really prioritize on those use cases was setting up the governance. So we set up a working group. In the very beginning, we had this concept of kind of a center of gravity, which was just a bunch of interesting people working together to kind of set up the components that we needed to set up. And then we formalized that into my organization structure, and we pulled together like a working group, which is still a very senior group. It's group executive minus one in most cases around that table. And then we set up a decision-making executive committee of the divisional CEOs, our chief underwriting officer, and our group CEO, and my boss, the head of tech and ops. And he chairs that organization. I bring the decisions in from the working group to that group to make decisions. So we trust the divisional CEOs to understand their business and be able to make those decisions around how we deploy capital. But within that, we have a good measurement model. So we gather the information, the market sizing, the addressable opportunity, the efficiency gains. We gather that up front, and then we take that to the executive teams to make decisions around what they want to do on a division basis.
Really interesting. Yeah, there's a load of good stuff in there that I think a lot of people will be able to take some ideas from, for sure. And obviously in our industry, we get sucked into this debate constantly about kind of proving value, right, and prioritizing based on potentially proving value. And I mean, the conversation in of itself is probably getting a little bit worn now, potentially, right? But I guess, was that part of the equation? And I guess, did you have to demonstrate anything to be able to, you know, get this stuff from, you know, ideas of potential use cases into something that is working for the business? Did you have to kind of go through any exercise that said, you know, this is what we're going to get back in return?
No. Actually, interestingly, we didn't have to do that, Carl. I think I have to thank the leadership of our group CEO and my boss, the head of ops and tech, Matt, for pushing in and leaning in, and for our ventures team, who were able to literally stand up a technical spike within like 6 days just to open people's minds around what was possible, like kind of demonstrate the use case in a way that people could visualize and understand. And that was a really key moment where people went, I kind of get what you can do with this. Even though we later found out. So within that context, you know, my boss pushed really hard and committed to our group CEO that we would do this in 12 weeks. And that was from a standing start with no team. So, you know, and I look back on that, and it was a massive challenge, but I'm grateful for it. And it just goes to show how your hard deadlines and high visibility help you move fast. So, you know, I didn't know whether we could make it, but we made it at the end of the day. And within the context of that, our business leaders instinctively knew that what we were trying to achieve had value for the business that we were doing it for in North America, and it had broader value as a generic use case that we could scale horizontally. So we could reuse and reuse again right across the business units. And there was not a huge debate around what the value was. There was just investment and an understanding that there would be value at the end of the day. Now, that's not to say there isn't rigor around that stuff. We measure it, you know, very closely in terms of the value we're generating on that. The next step for us was to avoid the organization going into analysis paralysis, right? To say, all right, now we need to get serious and we need to look at all of these and we need to have P&L and all of this kind of stuff. The approach from our leadership was still, CEOs know how to grow their businesses. They know where to point the capital and the value generation within their divisions. Let's follow that journey. And my emphasis at that moment in time was very much, let's make sure we keep the momentum. So we had one good story. We now needed one in each division at least. So I didn't want to go into analysis paralysis over the next phase because we needed to continue the momentum. There was a lot of excitement around it. So we went for that now, knowing that there was value in all of these things. So we were able to scale horizontally at that point. And now we're deepening that capability and extending it into different parts of the business. And now we have that governance process set up where we can express the value before we actually apply capital to it. So a limited kind of what I would almost call innovative spend, but not on the basis of experimentation, on the basis of working product in production.
Mm. Yeah, interesting. So I guess the use cases that were picked then must have been, you know, so obvious to those business unit directors or kind of CEOs who run those divisions that it was just a no-brainer, that there wasn't kind of any equation needing to be had to say, well, if we do this, you know, what's the upside in terms of a kind of revenue type number or anything like that?
Absolutely. I think it was obvious to them. And I think that was enabled through the ability to stand up a technical spike in 6 days. Like, albeit the scale of that, we could never have known. You know, we were looking at kind of 7 components within that technology spike. We ended up with 200 or so components in the actual delivery that took 12 weeks. So, yeah, it was a different scale completely, and we probably weren't ready for that. But I think, you know, that ability to inspire, to break through the art of the possible, to actually show something, was what made the difference in front of the business.
Yeah. I don't know how much you're allowed to share or not, but I guess, are there kind of, within those use cases now, are they buckets, you know, or segments, if you want to call them that, in terms of the purpose of them? You know, there's a lot of value in efficiencies, right, and productivity gains with generative AI, but I guess there's kind of layers to this, right? Become more complex. Yeah,
and look, I think the things we tried to avoid was the whole organization suddenly focusing on efficiency rather than value generation or increase in revenue. We wanted to make sure the capital was applied to the very front end of the business, that we could help our underwriters, help us grow revenue, help us improve our core, rather than, you know, 500 different flavors of, you know, process improvement or something. Like, you know, we've all been through, you know, the robot wars ultimately. And, you know, I think we've learned from that. We don't want a million flavors of that. What we really want is something that's going to add value to our business colleagues and going to help them connect with our customers better and serve our customers better. So we focused on that end of the business, in the underwriting space, the claim space, and the distribution space, rather than just looking at all the back office tasks. And the other thing we didn't want to do was have what we broadly call enthusiastic experimentation all over the business. We wanted working product in production because there's no value in enthusiastic experimentation, and far too many enthusiastic experiments never actually make it to production and therefore never add value. They may be a motivational piece for the teams, but in terms of return on investment, they don't really have a good track record. So we wanted to make sure that there was a good mix of that. We still do experimentation, but we still do innovation together with our colleagues across the organization, but our real focus is on that front end of the business and in growth.
Yeah, makes perfect sense. So obviously, you stand up or you show the business something that this is what we could do, and obviously that evidently is grasped the attention of the group CEO and I guess your boss, who's saying, right, yeah, we want this 12 weeks, go.
Yeah.
I can only imagine your face at that moment in time. But just talk us through, I guess, what are the challenges of having to go from showing them something that could be done to saying, yeah, well, right, this needs to be operational in production within 12 weeks.
Yeah. Well, look, I think shifting quickly to that pace was obviously a massive challenge, but having business support was the most critical thing we could have had. Right? I think if you don't have that at the beginning and all the way through, you can't go at that pace. And if you don't have that at the beginning and all the way through, you probably don't get good adoption either. So making sure we were lined up well in the first place was important. Identifying quickly and not debating. You know, the wonderful thing that 12-week window gives you is a very clear focus on two things. Not too much debate and a real close management of scope. So you've got to be able to do those two things. If you debate for too long, you don't make decisions and therefore you don't actually hit the date. And if you don't control scope and really focus on minimum viable proposition and really have very strong conversations with the business around how are we going to, do you see value in what we're going to deliver in 12 weeks or not? And avoid everyone wanting, you know, a blue button on the left rather than the red button on the right, that kind of thing, was really, really super important. So the challenge was pace, first of all. You know, we don't generally move at that pace. That was a very high pace for us to be able to move at. But we've been able to maintain that now in subsequent deliveries. And even in some cases where we've been replicating, we've been able to go faster. But I wouldn't say, so finding the right partner, getting everything set up, getting the right people focused on everything that we needed to do. And obviously, you know, pulling business leaders and underwriters off of their day job to be able to sit in rooms with us and do prompt design was a challenge. But you know, I've got to take my hat off to them. They really leaned in and they saw the value, so they came and worked closely with us to do that. And that's now, you know, a core principle of how we mobilize any of these across the organization. The business aren't present, we shouldn't start, right? Because the business also won't be there when you're trying to move it out of testing into production, which will be a failure. So look, I wouldn't just say that those problems or challenges existed in the past tense, they also exist in the future tense. So, you know, they're continuous, right? Yeah, making sure that we're timing our engagement with the business to make sure that we're not in the middle of a huge renewal period where actually they couldn't come off doing what they're doing to be able to help us deliver for them is important. So sequencing continues to be a challenge, and being able to sense the amount of change the organization can consume at any one time continues to be a challenge. But there are some other challenges that I should talk about probably that you need to make sure that you've done before you even start the journey. Like, so making sure you've got an approach to responsible AI, making sure that you understand bias in the models, that you've created guardrails and controls. Setting that all up was a huge challenge as well. And, you know, me and my team are pretty exhausted now. We're coming to the end of a whole series of around 4 or 5 months of executive education around AI, which has required long nights, you know, given our global nature, some very early mornings, very late nights, sitting in training sessions, making sure that all of our executive teams, you know, our top 100 and 200 people, and our non-executive directors and boards are all trained and understand where we're going with generative AI, understand that we have controls and guardrails around, you know, around things like bias and things like understanding a hallucination in the model, all of those things. That was an enormously heavy lift. And we started in September last year. So we're sitting here 6 months later with a tremendous amount of work under our belts, an amazing journey, but still with so much more ahead of us in terms of, you know, continuing to get the organization to operate at pace and to make sure that people focus on real value generation and not enthusiastic experimentation in isolation.
Mm, yeah, that's really interesting, because I think, you know, for a lot of people and a lot of organizations, being able to deliver something into production with generative AI is one thing, but obviously we all know about the challenges on the other side of, you know, getting the, you know, adoption or understanding or education is, as you put it, being another ball game altogether, right?
Yeah.
Is that a kind of real consideration from the get-go, kind of knowing that this was coming down the pipe, it was going to, you know, we're going to do something here? Obviously, you know, you probably weren't expecting it to be a 12-week time frame, right? But I guess was you ahead of the curve on that, or was there some kind of, I guess, education in terms of managing upwards to say, okay, yeah, we could do this, but we need to have a focus on this as well. Otherwise, it's not quite going to land.
No, look, I think the leadership of the organization have been very attuned to the fact that one of the key enablers of this journey has been education and just getting the word out, making sure people understand. You know, there's some great teams groups across the organization where people are looking at what's emerging and the emerging technology, but there's also other groups of people who are, you know, very focused on the execution or understanding the guardrails and the risk of what's happening in regulation. So I think there's a huge community across the organization now that's connected to this subject with still lots and lots more learning to do and lots more opportunity for us to roll out solutions. So I think we have very strong leadership across the board helping and supporting this journey with real foresight into where we needed to go. You know, we've got great non-execs as well from very innovative industries who helped us along that journey and great execs who had the foresight to be able to see that we needed to do education and communication around this. So, you know, we were properly funded to be able to do that from the very beginning, which is fantastic to have that level of support in the organization. On the guardrail stuff, I mean, we just instinctively knew, you know, there's risk in generative AI. And therefore, if we didn't really do a good job of thinking through, you know, what those guardrails would look like, looking at what the industry has done, bringing in external people to give us some advice and look at how we might cope with that, and communicating with our risk colleagues and our board risk groups to make sure everybody was comfortable with the journey that we were going to take. You know, I think we just instinctively knew there was a risk component here that we had to also deal with. And again, we got the right support to be able to. It's a journey though, right? I don't want to paint this as a completely finished picture. We've only been doing it for 6 months. So there's a lot of work to continue to do on all sides. But what we've been able to do is have a risk appetite around this. And, you know, that risk appetite really is quite risk averse, right? So we're only doing co-pilot type stuff where there's a human in the loop. We're not doing any full automation in this space. We're making very clearly sure that, you know, this is an opportunity for our people to work with AI, not for AI to replace people. It's quite the opposite, in fact. It's very much an approach to co-pilot and, you know, like an underwriting assistant that helps people move through that process in much quicker time.
Nice. Yeah. Well, I think, you know, even so, Chris, it probably says a lot about the leadership of the business, because obviously, you know, large, highly regulated businesses are obviously normally quite standoffish of this, you know, and I guess the risk can often paralyze any action at all, right? Because they are just too fearful of, you know, what if it goes wrong? So I think that's, you know, obviously there's an element of innovation and transformation at the heart of the organization somewhere within that kind of realm of leadership, but which is interesting.
I think, you know, we had some really good conversations and the values in the conversation, right, with the leadership. And I think we had some very open conversations around, gee, some of the risk in here is in doing nothing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what's the risk of doing nothing? And it's high because, you know, the ability to move quickly into this space provides you with the opportunity to improve. And if everyone in the market's improving, but you're not, you're going to get left behind. So I think there was a good, strong understanding of the balanced risk approach in that respect.
Yeah, no, that's very interesting and a very good point. What about, I guess, from a internal data analytic, you know, your organization perspective, obviously having the skills and the resource to kind of to do what you needed to do, because I guess a lot of organizations probably at the minute find themselves thinking about stuff they could do, but, you know, are probably delayed from doing that because they might not have the right structure or, you know, the right people in the right seats to be able to do that.
Yeah, look, I think so there's still way more demand than there is supply in the organization, that's for sure. But then again, as I said earlier, there's only a certain amount of change any organization consume all at one time. So we've got to balance those two things appropriately. There's continuing improvement in the availability of resource around prompt design and prompt engineering in the generative AI space. And of course, we've got a good, you know, available source of capability around data science now. That problem isn't so difficult to solve as it used to be, you know, a few years back. Mm-hmm. But this new role of prompt engineering or prompt design and we do sort of separate those two things out a little bit, is a new capability. And, I kind of contrast a lot of what we do in data science is applied mathematics in one way, shape, or form, and this is applied language. And they are different. Everyone thinks about this as a data science capability. And sure, some of it is, particularly if we're going to be building and training our own models, but most of what we're working with are industry standard public models. So we're not training anything. A lot of people asked us actually during the training process, the training of people in the organization, well, how are you training the models? And, we consistently said, we're not training the model. We're leveraging the models that already exist. So, but as you get more towards small language models, et cetera, then you get that core data science need. So I think there is still an imbalance between supply and demand across the organization. That continues to be a challenge. You've also got to use partners in the right way to be able to scale this up quickly. And then you've got to have a view on how do you build for the longer term? What is the consistent demand in the organization that you can manage with a good return on investment? So you've got to really think very commercially around where do we invest? How do we invest? And what's the balance of those resources in terms of location and cost? And how do we build something that's sustainable and can still move at the pace that we want it to? So, I think having a fast start, you can't build that from scratch without going straight to a partner who has experience. So just impossible to do, right? We couldn't do it. You can't hire enough people in 12 weeks to deliver in 12 weeks, let alone, which you probably know better than most. you just can't. You can't move that quickly. So you got to have a partner. Yeah. To address it.
Yep. Agreed. No, makes sense. How do you manage upwards here, Chris? Because obviously once, the business has a flavor of success and, what can be done, I'm sure, and as you said, 300 plus potential use cases that are going through some kind of prioritization, how do you ensure that, it doesn't go too fast, too quickly, that it falls over?
It's a really good question. Look, I think we are measured. And because we've got those governance components in place, we're just very measured around how we're leaning into this. And I think you can scale horizontally, you can scale vertically, you can scale across businesses. We've set the architecture up so as it can scale. And I think we have that control mechanism in terms of that working group and that executive group to be able to make sure that we are very considered around how we scale. It doesn't feel to me, we've got a backlog of use cases, yes. They don't all necessarily stack up in terms of the value equation. So there are some that we need to do and some that we don't. We can scale quickly. So, with the components that were built in North America, for instance, we can scale into Europe in 8 weeks. So something that took 12 originally now takes 8. So, that horizontal scaling is really valuable. And I think we can go fast in that space. So as much as we need underwriting assistance across all of our businesses, we can go relatively quickly in that domain. As we move into the claims domain, the variation in the use cases is greater and therefore they take a little bit longer. But I think we're very measured and transparent in terms of how we communicate with our CEOs, our group CEO, our chief underwriting officer, our head of ops and tech. So as they can see what the portfolio and the backlog look like, and they can determine, how they apply capital. They're in charge of the capital of the organization, not me. So, they can make very measured and very well-informed decisions around where to apply that capital and the speed we want to go at. And we're constantly asking ourselves, are we going quickly enough and are we doing enough? And formulating the right strategy around that is a continuous conversation. It's not one meeting that happens that allows you to do that ultimately.
Yeah, no, 100% makes perfect sense. So I guess a couple of things that I want to finish on then, conscious of time. I guess just kind of, top line headlines of if there's, other CDOs out there or whatever the case may be listening to this, thinking like, they're about to go on this journey of trying to get some, Gen AI capability into production. What would be the top level advice that you'd give them in terms of considerations?
And, this isn't just from our perspective, but from, we've had a lot of conversations around the industry and with MIT and others across the industry. So I think we've got a reasonable view of what it takes to have a good start. I'm going to try and avoid using the word be successful because, it's a journey. It's not a point in time. I think for our organization, certainly, business support, support of our divisions has been second to none and absolutely critical. We've got to get people on board with the journey. And we've been incredibly lucky to have fantastic colleagues across the business that have been able to work with us. Our ventures organization have been amazing and a huge support to us in this context. So having the right partner so you can scale has been critically important. But getting the right advice around what's happening in other organizations and building the basics in terms of communications, training, and guardrails. Start there and build fast and focus on getting working product into production, not fanciful experimentation in 15 different directions across the organization. So focus on one thing, try and move quickly, and then expand from there. We've got four concurrent implementations taking place, which is four times as intense as the first 12 weeks. So, and you know, I can very well imagine we could double that again in the next phase. So, you know, I think, but be patient. You've got to make sure that your guardrail components are in there. You're thinking about risk. You're understanding what regulatory obligations are coming down the pipe. And you're working with your risk colleagues and other colleagues across the organization. But getting those initial foundations and then just focusing on very measured, very well thought through growth will be essential. But the only way you get there is by training people. You've got to train and communicate with people and raise the overall literacy of the organization around AI.
Yeah. Last thing then, have you got any examples of the type of activities and initiatives that you were doing from an education standpoint, just to give people a flavor of, you know, what's
working? So we started actually simply with an hour with the group board, just kind of talking through and having a conversation, talking about guardrails and controls and how we were thinking about that. We spoke to the board risk committee and the enterprise risk committee. And then we started really building training capability. So we really started training divisional boards or management teams, leadership teams, and the layer beneath them, depending on how each individual division wanted to go about it. And we tailored the content to those businesses. So we made it relevant to them. And they were, and we did the group executive as well. So we trained the group executive as well in addition. And we're just finishing those over the next 2 weeks. We're just finishing that round of training. But they were very tailored towards the businesses they were in. They were contextually relevant. So we put a lot of effort into making sure the content was right. And again, we partnered with an organization to be able to deliver that as well. And it was incredibly intense. So we had great people doing it and a tremendous focus on detail and being able to explain the guardrails, how generative AI works, you know, where we would use vector databases, not in a massively detailed technical component, but why we would be thinking about certain things, and then what the industry context is, what the competitive context is. So we trained everyone around that. So they actually understood the journey we were on, or the difference rules between generative AI and other AI and machine learning. And the obvious fact that we started the call on, which was, you know, generative AI is not the answer to every problem in the organization. So we wanted to land that clear message as well, that we needed to be focused and measured around how we go about the journey. So that was really, that's really where we're at. We've got some, within our broader Data Academy, we've got some standard, we've got about four or five different courses around prompt engineering and other components of AI. So they're open for everybody to take. And we will be rolling out more broad generalist training for the organization as we move forward. So there's still more to do, but starting with the leadership, so as we can start getting the strategy established with good understanding and experience of what we were able to do, and within that context, accelerating the ability to demo something within their really wheelchair life.
Yeah, nice. Well, it sounds like there's still a lot of work and a potentially exciting journey still to follow. So, but yeah. Look, appreciate your time, Chris. Thank you so much for coming back on the show. And look forward to catching up soon and seeing how the rest of the journey is unfolding.
No, I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you again, Carl. And
cheers. All right, speak soon.
That's it for this episode of Driven by Data, the podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. I'll be back next week speaking with another thought leader from the world of data and analytics. Until then, please follow Orbition Group on social media if you've not already done so, where you'll be able to subscribe and therefore be made aware of the podcasts as they arrive. And please share, like, and leave reviews so that more people from our industry get to hear and benefit from these too. If you've got any questions or you want to suggest ideas for topics or potential guests, then please feel free to reach out to me. Thanks for listening, and I'll be back next week.